covering the crew all season long on WTMJ. This is Brewers Extra Inning. Now, here's your host, Dominic Catronio.
Just another day at Coors Field. Oh my goodness. How on earth did they win that game? Doesn't care how ugly it is. Doesn't care how, you know, frustrating it is for eight innings. And quite frankly, doesn't care if you deserve to win or not. Baseball says, did you score more runs than the other team? A win is a win is a win is a win. That's all we can really take away from a night like tonight. Brewers win 9-7 in 10 innings of just an arc that rivals any great thriller you've read, with absolute frustration for the first 85% of the book. I mean, wow. This team was getting one hit through eight innings, and they came back to win with four runs in the ninth, four runs in the 10th, a Coors Field special to win 9-7. The pitching was, you know, honestly, the pitching wasn't as bad as you thought it was until the ninth and the 10th innings, ironically enough, with the leverage guys coming into this game. We'll talk about Brandon Sproat, a mixed bag once again from him today. The offense was completely absent for the first eight innings of this game, and yet they found a way. That ninth inning, you know, up against Antonio Sensatella, who we talked about in yesterday's Brewers Weekly, saying this is a guy that just, it matters. He is going to be one of the more consistent, bullpen arms that the Rockies have. He's the guy that you have to be afraid of. And he was dominant, struck out the side in the eighth inning. And again, it's 3-1 heading to the top of the ninth. There is no reason to think, oh boy. Yeah, well, chalk it up. One of those days at Coors, and then boom, base hit. And then the big play, and Tim Diller talked about this a lot over on the telecast. You cannot give the Brewers extra outs, and you essentially made the ninth inning a five-out inning by Sensatella failing to turn a double play on a little comebacker off the bat of William Contreras. That inning then became, instead of nobody on and two outs, you suddenly have men on the corners and nobody out. Then, RBI single for Jake Bowers. Who else? RBI double for Sal Frelick. Two-run single by Andrew Vaughn off the bench. I mean, in the blink of an eye, they scored four. However, the Rockies then score two in the bottom of the ninth off Trevor McGill. We'll talk about what went wrong for him. And then the Brewers explode for four more in the 10th inning, aided by a couple of walks. And then once again, Jake Rake Bowers, a two-run double to right center. Then it was Garrett. Then it was Sal. I mean, good teams find a way, right? That's what I said when the Brewers took the lead in the ninth inning and then they did it again in the 10th inning. You find a way. It just has to happen. The better team won today just because it didn't perform better for the majority of the game. The better team finds a way to win. They were finding ways to lose it, it seemed, in that ninth and 10th inning. But the Brewers are a club that, A, have done it before. They know they can have comeback wins like they really did in the second half of last season. And they've done a little bit so far this year. And they can score in bunches. Oh, by the way, another nine runs without a home run at Coors of all places, right? I think that what makes this offense so scary and so impressive, despite still being underwhelming on some of the slash line numbers, is once again, when they get cooking, it is hard to stop them, right? I look at the overall numbers in today's game. The Brewers drew six more walks. Yes, they struck out 11 times. Not great. And when I look at what they did with runners in scoring position, not only giving themselves six hits, right, going 6 for 15, the 15's a number that's sort of impressive too. Again, this team was one hit through eight innings, and they still ended up with 15 at-bats with the runner in scoring position, not even including walks. It's when it's going, it's like, gosh, how can you stop this? And when it's down like it was for the first eight innings, you're like, oh boy, oh gosh, oh gosh. So it's a mixed bag, right, of reacting to a game like this where the Brewers did not deserve to win it, and yet they did. 9-7 over the Rockies. We're up late. I'm flying solo tonight. 855-616-1620 is the phone number. 855-616-1620, or over in the YouTube live chat as well. The Cardiac Crew is a great call there. you know, I compare this to Pac-12 After Dark. You know, I'm a Pac-12 guy. I'm an Arizona State guy. So Pac-12 After Dark is just dark to me. It's not after dark like it is for everybody in the Central and East Coast time zones. Yeah, that's what this night was. And we got plenty more Pac-12 After Dark, if you will. Brew Crew After Dark coming up the rest of this week, because this was the earliest first pitch time of the week. So buckle up, get your coffee, and get ready to go. A few texts that have rolled in here so far. Alex from Oshkosh, weird game, but the comeback crew still got the win. Mitch from Kenosha, bats were quiet those first eight innings, but what a comeback in the ninth. That's why you have to record all 27 outs to win. Ugly wins are still wins. This one from the 262. Every branch on the ugly tree. That game certainly was. Glad we came out on top, but that hurt to watch. It was frustrating. And I think frustrating is a good way to put it, because you know they were better than they were in those first eight innings, including the guy who started this game, Brennan Sproat, because we're going to get lost in the highlights and the comeback and everything like that. I kind of want to put Sproat at the top of the program here to talk about him to make sure we don't get lost, because it felt frustrating, but then you get a bigger view at it and it wasn't that bad. I'll explain what I feel about Brandon Sproat and what I learned about Sproat today coming up on the other side of the break right here on your home of the Brewer, 620 WTMJ.
This is Brewers Extra Innings on WTMJ.
Crazy, crazy game. Crazy game. Still two more, Coors. So buckle up, man. Nine runs on eight hits for the crew. They didn't commit an error. Granted, there was a mental error in that ninth inning. Seven runs on 11 hits, one error for the Rockies. It was the difference of the game, that one error. Brewers left eight, Rockies left 10. The winner is Trevor Megill, despite the blown save. The loser is Juan Mejia, excuse me. Mejia gets his fifth loss of the season. Also a blown save to Senzatella, only his second of the season. Extra innings as the Brewers get the victory. By the way, they're now 4-2 in extra inning games this season. Brewers get the victory. It gets a few more texts, a few more chats as well. 855-616-1620. Welcome to call if you're up late as well. Don't worry. I mean, it's all good here. It's not going to be like a Jake from State Farm situation. But let's talk about who's hot, who's cold. It's brought to you by our friends at Sider Heating, Plumbing, and Electrical. Wisconsin homeowners, are you thinking about a new cooling system? Sider makes it easy. You can get a virtual quote in under 10 minutes right from home with short and long-term financing options. You can visit or call. You can go to Sider.com, S-E-I-D-E-R.com today. It's families helping families since 1912. So I want to talk about hot and cold because he's a mix of both. And that's Brandon Sproat today. Again, I think sometimes the Twitter mob is wrong about things. Whoa, what, shocking, I know. But here's the thing. I will gladly put my hand up when I think I'm wrong. Okay, I got no problem saying I was wrong on a take or something like that. And I also got no problem in sticking to my guns and looking at the numbers and looking under the hood and trying to figure out context to performances. Okay, here's the nitty-gritty, the first and foremost. He's got a 6.17 ERA in his first 12 starts as a Brewer. I understand. I'm not trying to sugarcoat that. That's not good. It's not good at all. And the Brewers expected that to be better. He expected that to be better. So why isn't it better? I think on a 10,000-foot view of today's game, if I would have told you a Sproat with a, you know, north of 5.5 ERA coming into Coors Field for the first time, who still has just 15 games in his big league career in a brand new organization. Again, the context matters here. Going into Coors saying, hey, it's his first time at Coors, he's going to go five innings and three earned runs allowed. Would you take it? All of you would have taken it. Every single one of you. However, watching that game, watching how he got to those three earned runs makes you want to slam a table because you know he's better than that. And he knows he's better than that. Chris Hook knows he's better than that. We could see them talking in between innings in the dugout. I'm like, hey, man, let's go, kind of thing. Here's what I think and what I pull away from Brandon Sproat today. It's hard to pitch at altitude. I understand. Okay, I think everything we were about to say, taking with a tiny grain of salt, given the performance. But yet, if William calls a curveball on two strikes, you can't hang it. You can't hang it. I don't care if it's the altitude. I don't care if it's a slip. I don't care if you have an issue with the mound. 0-2 curveballs cannot be hung, regardless of what ballpark you're in. He knows that. They're going to get punished in the big leagues, no matter what. Furthermore, two-strike hits, finding a way to get batters out. Now, this is where maybe the biggest grain of salt comes in, because, again, your stuff's moving differently. You're trying to understand what's working, what's not. But I highlighted the few at-bats today in my score sheet here where he got ahead 0-2 and let the man on. It's just more pitches that add up on Brandon Sproat, right? A two-out walk after getting ahead 0-2 in the first inning. It didn't come back to bite them, thank goodness, but that's one of them. Got ahead of Tovar 0-2 before his ground rule double on a 2-2 pitch. Got ahead of Edward Julian 0-2 before hanging a breaking ball and lining an RBI single into left field. Got ahead of Hunter Goodman 1-2 before his home run on a 3-2 pitch. You know, we've spent so much time and energy talking about Brandon Sproat needing to get ahead of the count, and then he does, and he fails to put away hitters. Again, Coors. But at the same time, there's a difference between execution and a matter of, did you get the guy out, right? Did you execute the process? Did you execute the pitch? If the answer is no, everything else is moot. Now, if you executed the nastiest curveball example, like if you execute the nastiest curveball of your life, it's below the zone, you're getting a chase, you're getting a guy to swing and miss or swing at a pitch out of the zone, and he bloops one in the shallow right field. That's a different story. But we didn't see that. We're seeing loud contact with two strikes. Again, Coors. And we're seeing this quite frankly from Brandon Sproat right now. But here's the reality of the situation. Where are you going to go? Who do you go to? Do you bring Chad Patrick back into the bullpen and send Brandon Sproat down to AAA? Okay, well, who goes to the bullpen? Brian Fitzpatrick's hurt now. We just saw that happen today. It's another guy on your 40-man roster going down. Jared Koenig's still on the way back. But after that, now the depth gets really tested in the bullpen. Because when Koenig returns and Serpa is gone for the year, and now Fitzpatrick, that didn't look great. He could be gone for the year. Hall is out for at least a month, probably longer. Your lefties like Ashby and Koenig, whew. All of a sudden you went from, oh, we have so many lefties to we have none. So again, there are ripple effects of trying to move Brandon Sproat out of the starting rotation because of the health of this team. The depth is being tested. So the way I look at it, the hot is that after that third inning, he was a whole different pitcher, right? He was attacking. Granted, there were some 2-0 counts in there, but he was missing in spots that wouldn't hurt him, right? And then executing his pitches, taking advantage of the Rockies being so aggressive against him. This was a teetering type of start for Brandon Sproat. It could have gone really haywire in that fourth inning after allowing a leadoff single to the 8 hitter. After, you know, they're down 3-1 at this point. Leadoff single to the 8 hitter, and you're getting ready for the third time through the order. No, he buckles down. He gets a strikeout on Julian. He gets a double play to end the inning on McCarthy. And then it could have even, you know, got out of hand in the fifth inning. We've talked about it so much about Sproat struggling as the game goes on. The velo isn't there. The performance isn't there. The bite isn't there. And a leadoff walk in the fifth inning. You've heard me say it. Every great rally started with a leadoff walk. And well, even a wild pitch got him to second base. No big deal. Ground out, pop out, ground out. Got out of it. Got 5 innings. Ended on a positive note. So again, that's where the mixed bag comes in. Because in a vacuum, if I told you before this game he was going to go 5 at Coors and only give up 3 runs, I promise you, you would have taken it. But again, for all of us who watched the game, understand it's self-inflicted right now on Sproat. Is it mental? Because I don't think it's physical. Touch a 98, man. I mean, the stuff's there. I believe in the stuff. I saw it from right behind home plate in spring training. I'm watching it. I'm watching the reaction to the pitching group of the development team of the Ivory Tower, and I'm like, yeah, I see it too, but we haven't seen it yet in game action. And the only way to bring that out is to keep throwing him out there and giving him the opportunity to learn and try to get better. His next start will be against a great Phillies team. We're going to find out more back at home coming up next weekend, I imagine. Because I don't think he's going to start Wednesday. I don't think they would go on the fifth-day rotation that quickly in Vegas with him. Could be wrong. Crazier things have happened. But use that off day next Thursday and then have him start probably Friday against the Fightin' Phils. So I wanted to make sure we talked plenty about Brandon Sproat. Now let's get into the rest of the chaos of this game, because there was plenty of it, and a few more texts as well. 855-616-1620. 855-616-1620. Jake freaking rakes, y'all. Jake Bowers continues to shine. We'll talk about him in the offense next on 620 WTMJ.
This is Brewers Extra Innings.
Roller coaster of a game. The Brewers win it somehow. And we're still talking about it here late night on WTMJ. Welcome in. I'm Dom Catronio. Thanks for making us a part of your Friday night, soon to be Saturday morning. A few texts here. This one from Mark. What a game and a comeback. However, shouldn't have gotten to extra innings. Sproat and McGill. Well, hey, we just talked about Sproat. Sproat was not a reason for the loss or this game going to extras, quite frankly. And McGill, we'll talk about McGill, have done what they should have done. Hopefully, one or both will become effective. I think McGill had a blip. I think he got coursed a little bit today. And we just talked about Sproat for a while. Jeff from Elkhorn. I love that the Brewers fight for everything. We need to find some healthy arms, though. And I hate Coors Field. Do you think the Brewers need to trade for some extra bullpen up arms at the deadline? Absolutely. Absolutely. You can never have enough pitching, man. You really can't. Now, shout out to Craig Yoho for his performance today. Back in the big leagues, two innings, shutout, a couple of strikeouts in there. Bad news, though, for Brian Fitzpatrick, per manager Pat Burphy. This is from Kurt Hoge of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Brian Fitzpatrick felt a pop in his elbow. He'll get an MRI tomorrow, and it's a precursor for Tommy John surgery, and it didn't look good. You never want to assume, but everybody who's thrown a baseball and has seen a teammate go down like that, yep, they knew what that looked like instantly. So I feel for Brian Fitzpatrick. I guess the only silver lining is that he did it while on a big league roster. So service time, baby. The next couple of texts here. This team never gets rattled. One hit going to the ninth, and they woke up. That one from Chef Ed. Appreciate it, Ed. This one to cap off on Brandon Sproat. I feel like Sproat's outings always drag in the moment, and then you look at his line, and it's not that bad. It's just unfortunate he isn't able to make it through more than five normally. I agree with that entirely. I won't forget the offense going into the ninth, though. Woof. So let's talk about that. That's what I want to get into here, because Jake Bowers was a one-man wrecking crew today. You look at the hardest hit balls in today's contest. Jake Bowers is three of the five hardest hit balls on the night. And granted, one of them was a double play ball from Brett Sullivan of the five. So let's say of the six hardest hits of the game, Jake Bowers had three of them. He had the second, the third, and the fourth. The second, the third, and the fourth. Yeah, all in a row. 112, 109, 107. Dude rakes. And it's an understatement, because you look at it for his day. Leads off with a double in the second. That came after working a count from 1-2 to 2-2 and ripping the double and coming in to score on the RBI ground out from Renjifo. Then he popped out. All right, put the ball in play. Struck out against the bullpen in the seventh. And then with an ambush opportunity, he doesn't swing at the first pitch often. But when he does damage. Single up the middle. That got the Brewers back on the board. It was only their third hit of the game at the time. That put them within one. And then, obviously, the Brewers would score later in the ninth. And then the rocket with the bases loaded in the 10th inning to make it a four-run inning in back-to-back frames. I know he's not going to be an all-star. And I hate saying that so bluntly and just so as a matter of factly. Because when you got Matt Olson doing what he's doing, and when you got Bryce Harper playing in the home city that's hosting the All-Star game, it's next to impossible for Jake to be the All-Star first baseman. But I just want to look at these numbers, man. 277, 361 on base, 497 slug, and an 858 OPS. All career bests right now in just 54 games, I understand. But we're getting closer to the point. The most plate appearances he's ever had in a season is 423, and that was when he was back as a 23-year-old in the juice ball year in 2019. And even that year, he had 12 homers and 16 doubles. Now, he was really good with Tampa Bay in his rookie year, then gets traded to Cleveland. I mean, this dude has been around the block. Tampa, Cleveland, Seattle, New York, now Milwaukee. And at age 30, he is aging well. He has understood what it takes to be a big leaguer. And he has really been the core of the Brewers offense, you can argue. He is a virtually everyday player now. I know he's hitting fifth. I'm ready to start to shake up this lineup a little bit, man, because We talked about it yesterday with William Contreras having his struggles right now. Another quiet day for him. Christian Yelich and Jackson Chourio went a combined 0 for 10, and the Brewers won this game. So what could you possibly do? Here's the first thing I would do. I put Bryce in the leadoff spot. Put him back in the leadoff. I like him third. I think I like him better leading off. Here's the next thing I'm going to do. I'm going to keep Chourio second, but I'm going to move Bowers to third. He's earned it. He's the best hitter on the team. You want him hitting with men on base. This is where I get a little fancy. I'm putting Yelly cleanup. Yes, I got back-to-back lefties there. Yelly can hit lefties, and Bowers has proven that when given the chance, he can hit lefties too. And then I'm putting William fifth because he's not hitting for power. You give him a better opportunity when maybe there are men aboard, and you give him the opportunity for that window for a lefty to come in. If they're going to counter with a lefty versus Bowers and Yelly, oh, well, if you don't get those guys, you got William right there ready to rake. And then maybe after him, I'm putting Garrett or Sal. I want to find a way to get Andrew Vaughn in this lineup more frequently, but I don't know how. Because here are the trade-offs that you're dealing with for this offense. Number one, if you're putting Vaughn in at first base, he's an average to below average defender at first. He's gotten better, for sure, but he's an average to below average defender at first. Bowers is the better defender. And by putting Bowers in left field, you get worse in left field. Defensively, that is. Is that worth the squeeze to get more offense in your lineup? I think right now it is. But then, let's say, how do you do it when you're facing a righty? Yelich is going to play every day. Like that is very, very clear. So is the answer put Bowers at first, Yelly in left against the righty, and Vaughn DHing? Because you need to find a way to have both Bowers and Vaughn in the lineup. And it's not just Bowers in left and Vaughn at first. Now, granted, Chourio, today was the day that he finally cooled off, but he had been swinging the bat hot as of late. I'm sure he can be fine being an everyday player again. I'm intrigued to see what happens to Garrett Mitchell and Sal Frelick the rest of this series. I mean, Sal, how about him? On base four times today. Continues to show signs of life, like little steps forward of continuing to show, like, okay, hitting the ball harder again. Even a couple of foul balls are like 109 off the bat for him. The month of May was not anything to write home about for Sal, but very quietly, since he hit that double, I'm going to say in Minnesota, yeah, that snapped a stretch of not having an extra base hit for almost a month. But I'm pulling up the numbers right now. Since he hit that double to snap that cold snap when it comes to slug, that was on May 17th. Since that happened, his last 16 games, he's hitting 259, which doesn't sound great. I understand. Six doubles. He's got more walks than strikeouts. He's got four stolen bases in there. It's only a 305 on base, but lately it's trending upward. He's reached base in every game he's played so far here in June. He even had a good game, a good couple of games against St. Louis. Just monitoring. If we can get Sal back above league average, get him back above 240, start to see, okay, here comes the on base coming back. Here comes Sal's going to be a big piece of this lineup moving forward. We could talk about the left side of the infield all we want till the cows come home. I understand. It ain't changing yet, and the changes are internal. Whenever they call up Cooper, whenever they call up Jett, that's the change. But externally, there are not a lot of bats available, so I don't know what the Brewers can truly do in that regard. Are you buying that? Are you selling that? Well, if you're buying or selling a home, you should go to Tony Wendorford Associates. Hey, segue. How about that? Our friends at Tony Wendorford Associates, one of the top real estate teams in Wisconsin. They're powered by Keller Williams. They bring faith, family, and a red carpet experience to every home deal. So if you're looking to buy or sell a home, trust Tony Wendorford Associates with a winning team behind you. WendorfTeam.kw.com. I want to talk about a player of the game. It's obviously Jake Bowers, but who else could we go to? And we got to break down what went wrong for the bullpen there in these 9th and 10th innings for the crew to survive a wacky 9-7 game in 10 over the Rockies right here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
Welcome back to Brewers Extra Innings.
Welcome back. I'm Dom Catronio. We'll try to get some sense of the highlights. We'll also hear from Pat Murphy here. Go a little while longer. Flying solo here for the weekend. Jerry will be back during the Vegas series. But I look at the Brewers right now and I look at a team that has guys underperforming, that has guys overperforming, and I sit down and go, you know, it's not bad. And sometimes you can't see the forest from the trees, and I look at the team stats and their rankings, and we all heard, oh, they don't hit homers. Blah, blah, blah. Where do you think, you know, on a park-adjusted stat, like WRC+, where do you think the Brewers are right now? Do you think they're above league average or below league average as an offense? And I mean, that includes everything on the left side of the infield. That includes some of the cold days from center field. That includes a lot of things. It's above average. It's 101. And there are only 12 teams above average right now in baseball. I certainly believe this is an above average offense across baseball. I mean, you look at it, the Brewers, their WRC plus is 101. Okay. The Cubs is 107. They have virtually the same walk rate, the same strikeout rate. The Cubs obviously have more power. The Brewers have a slightly better on-base percentage, slightly better batting average, and thus with more power, the Cubs have a better slug. And so WRC+, when you factor in everything with park factor and all that stuff, they get 6 more points than the Brewers. But I mean, I just go down this list. Brewers won a series against the Rays. They're one stop ahead of them. Haven't seen Baltimore yet. They won a series against the Astros. Swept the White Sox. Struggled with the Nats, but we know their offense is pretty darn good. Swept the Cubs. Haven't played the Mariners yet. Lost a series to the Pirates. Give them credit there. Haven't seen the Braves. Swept the Yankees. Got beat by the Dodgers. Those are the teams ahead of them when it comes to offense. I mean, sometimes numbers do lie. I think their offense is better than this, but I don't think it's like top five in baseball by any stretch of the imagination. And they do need to get better offensively to have a better consistency moving forward. But for player of the game, it's easily Jake Bowers. Brought to you by International Autos Group. Just like the game's MVP, you can drive in a summer in style and save up to $15,000 on select in-stock models. Visit iamilwaukee.com. International Autos, where ordinary needs to be extraordinary. When I look at what went wrong today, though, in the ninth and the 10th inning for McGill and Ashby, first of all, altitude, okay? I know people have heard this, and your ears may glaze over, your eyes may glaze over as I talk about this, but I don't care. I just kind of want to educate for a moment here, so let me pontificate. Altitude, you've heard about, oh, it's hard to pitch it, but what exactly is happening, okay? Because there's less air, because you're elevated, there's less friction, and there's less Magnus effect. There's less ride on your fastball, okay? Magnus effect helps you create ride on your backspin and how efficient your spin is. And I don't want to bore you with the details, but ironically enough, the more efficient your spin rate is, the worse it's going to perform at altitude. So that's where you try to introduce something called gyro spin when you're looking for cutters and sliders that have gyro spin, meaning they aren't impacted by anything other than gravity. You want to have that zero induced vertical break, right? So they just kind of gently fall and they get a little bit more horizontal help. But when it comes to heaters, specifically Trevor McGill's heater, a guy who averages 19 to 21 inches of vert, which is well above league average, right? That's where that illusion of a rising fastball comes, is now down to 15, 16 because of the altitude. Fastballs at the top of the zone become hittable because if you can paint a picture in your mind, that fastball on the top rail, that pitch that's so hard to lay off because you know it's probably going to be called for a strike and it's so hard to get on top of because it's holding its line all the way to the plate. But now when you don't have as much vert, what's supposed to be on that top rail now gets a few inches lower. And you may think, oh, what's the difference between 16 inches of induced vertical break and 19 inches of induced vertical break? Dom, it's 3 inches. Dude, that's the width of a barrel. That is, you know, a pop-up on the infield and center to right center and gone, right? So that's why this stuff matters to me, and it should matter to you as a baseball fan, understanding how this stuff works. All that is to say, Trevor McGill's fastball was getting pummeled today. He was not used to that. He had to make an adjustment. The curveball was snapping. It was great. Then he lost command with it, leading to that bases-loaded walk against a guy who's just 1-for-20 in the big leagues. Your breaking balls move differently, too. But the point being, I'm chalking today up for McGill to a quote-unquote Coors day. Like, you get a freebie on that, in my opinion, because your stuff's going to react so differently here than what you're supposed to be succeeding with, right? If McGill has this sort of a day next weekend against the Phillies where his fastball is just getting pummeled and he's getting 15, 16 verts, that's when I'll get concerned. But not for a day like this. And for Ashby, it always comes back to command for Ashby. It's not like he's invincible to walks. We've never accused Aaron Ashby of being a control freak. That's never been part of his MO. But the reason why he's able to hide it is because he's able to get swing and miss, is because he's able to get strikeouts. He's currently got the highest walk rate in his career at 11%. Last year it was 9%. But he also has the highest strikeout rate in his career at 33%, which is why you haven't noticed the walks as much as you may have. The other thing about Ashby that I think is very interesting right now, he's had some bad batted ball luck. 349 BABIP against him. He's supposed to be able to get ground balls. It's slightly ticked down. It's still above league average. 55% is still very good. But when you're behind 2-0 and a fastball and a ground ball gets hit harder, that's when he may be struggling. But for Ashby, the command was pretty ugly there in that 10th inning with the walk and or the hit batter and the walk. Clean single, but he did bounce back and get the double play ball on Karros, which set up the end of the game with McCarthy. I think that those two guys are blips on the radar. Yoho being back, that's good news to see him. I want to see him perform at the big league level. I really do. The cutter looked good. I wonder if the slider is going to come back as it was last season because the Stuff Plus models love his slider. Honestly, sometimes more than his changeup. And the best relievers don't have just one whip and they have multiple. So if he's, look, fastball's not fast. It's 93, 92. But the cutter gets them off the heater. The changeup obviously always needs to be respected. But if he's a rare reliever that has four pitches that are all average to above average, and then you got the freak pitch with the changeup, that can be pretty effective for this team moving forward. A couple of texts here before we get to another break in here from Murph up next. Bowers with another wonderful showing at the plate. Love to see him bounce back when the play at first with that huge double. Yeah, that play at first was weird. In case you missed it, chopper over to the right side, kind of between her, between first and second. Not truly in the 3-4 hole. It was Bryce's ball all the way. But Bowers took one step to field the ball and realized, I'm kind of a no man's land. I got to race back to first base. And then McGill was already racing over to the back to cover. It would have been close. Bowers was not in position. And they were kind of full steam ahead, crash course coming, runner hustling hard up the line. If McGill goes, I go, Bowers ducks, gets out of the way. But Bowers turned around and was trying to field it, and Terang just saw, I'm not going to throw this ball. That was a communication error. I've seen some talk about the defense. I need to dive into the numbers a little bit deeper. I do think the positioning for the Brewers this season has been a little bit off, but not necessarily at a performance defensively. They haven't got to as many balls because I think they've been positioned poorly, especially in the outfield. Garrett in center field has been a little underwhelming, but something to monitor moving forward. That was a mental error, not so much a positioning or a fielding error. It was just like, communicate. Happens. The Brewers won the game. We're splitting hairs. A couple other ones regarding Vaughn from the 262, getting more at-bats. I think you have to choose between two guys who should play. Should it be Mitchell, Sal, or Vaughn? I'm taking Sal and Vaughn. It's a hard decision, but I think Vaughn is swinging the bat the best. Keep Sal's gold glove defense in right, and it keeps him more of a balance with lefties and righties, and Garrett strikes out too much. Yeah, Garrett's a hard conversation coming. I mean, I wonder what the Brewers are thinking right now with Garrett, given you see it in flashes, and then it goes away for a little while. This one, if Bowers wasn't left-handed, he would be great at third. Might be the best guarantee to have his bat in the lineup. Put him or Vaughn at third. Now, Vaughn played third with the White Sox. It was not pretty. I just feel we could pick up a run and possibly two or three more hits a game by keeping both these guys on the corners, and your outfield won't be disturbed. I just don't. First of all, Vaughn can't play third, and definitely Bowers can't because he's left-handed. So if anyone's going to the outfield, it's Bowers. Vaughn will continue to get first base. But I also, somebody on the chat on YouTube said Bowers is not as good defensively. I disagree. I think Bowers is the better first baseman between him and Vaughn, especially when it comes to scoops, especially when it comes to pickoffs. You always want a left-handed first baseman. So those are things that I'm thinking about right now. We'll hear from the manager. How about him? Pat Murphy. I've talked plenty. I'm flying solo tonight and all weekend long. Murph, he's coming up after the break here on 620 WTMJ.
This is Brewers Extra Innings on WTMJ.
Welcome back. Wacky game. I've talked plenty. So got highlights to come. We'll be back with you again tomorrow and Sunday from Coors. I guess now today, I should say later tonight. 8:10 first pitch here on 620 WTMJ. Pre-game begins at 7 with yours truly. And then 2:10 on Sunday. Now, the manager, Pat Murphy, with some injury updates and some thoughts on a wacky game at Coors.
Well, the final two innings were teams just laying their hair back and playing and being free, playing the pitch. I mean, that's when baseball gets really fun. What we did in the first eight innings was not typical. Hats off to their pitchers. Feltner was fabulous. Senzatella in the first inning, or Hill was great. Senzatella first inning was, I love that kid. And yeah, he was fabulous the first inning. So yeah, it was one of those days where it's like shaking your head, like not having quality at bats, the Coors Field, hey, 3-1, I'm going to get something. Maybe I can, you know what I mean? It felt like that mentality. And we didn't capitalize, but I'll credit the Rockies pitchers for how good they did. Feltner's an experienced guy, and he's really good. But then after that, you know, we got going. We had some great at bats all at once against some really talented guys, and we kept it on them. And we could have done even more, but we kept it on them. And Ash came through big when he needed to.
Obviously, you get some help there with Senzatella throwing it away, but was there an at-bat in that night that you felt was key outside of that?
All right. Well, I mean, the Terang at-bat, the walk, the obviously the Bowers, and then Frelick. You know, Sal's had nine, according to me. He's had nine straight quality at-bats. And then Vaughn, obviously, base hit up the middle when needed. Yeah.
Stress level when Ashby was struggling to find the zone there at the beginning.
Yeah, I don't get that stressed, to be honest with you. You know, it's like I understand the reality of Major League Baseball and how tough it is to win a Major League game. And, you know, he's pitching on in Coors, and he's pitching in a mound that's a little different and all beat up from nine innings and many different pitchers. And, you know, it happens. He locks it back in pretty good, and he's got great confidence, which I'm – you know, I've seen this kid basically throw every major league pitch he has. And, yeah, it's sneaky. This kid is really just continues to grow come up big for us.
You talked about resiliency before the game. We talked about the full catastrophe. And today you have in the seventh inning, you have Fitzpatrick come out with an injury, just pouring on top of everything.
Yeah, and then he's throwing the ball so good,
and
too.
And then the resiliency comes in where they down the ninth inning.
Yoho just got in today and throws two great innings, much needed, and Fitzpatrick threw a great inning. You know, we're wishing for the best, but doesn't look good in the injury. He'll have an MRI tomorrow, but yeah, I mean, we keep having guys go down, and we keep digging deeper and deeper in the well, but that's what we have to do. That's part of it.
It's part of it, indeed. So the Brewers trying to understand what they have, what can they drag out of AAA right now? They did DFA Jake Woodford before today's game, put DL Hall on the IL, and recalled Brian Fitzpatrick, who's now going to be going back to the IL. He's probably out for the year. And then Craig Yoho, who pitched very well today. And then, otherwise, on the 40-man down there, you've got Easton McGee and Carlos Rodriguez, but now Carlos Rodriguez is dealing with a shoulder. Oof. Tyson Harden? Come on down. I don't know. Something to figure out for the Ivory Tower, not us. Highlights coming up next on 620 WTMJ.
Ready for this?
Out of here!
This?
Brought it back! Ho, ho, ho!
And this?
It is gone!
Time for tonight's highlights.
I don't even know where to begin with this, because the Brewers and the Rockies played a 10-inning game today. And I think all the highlights are going to play are going to be from the ninth inning on, because the Brewers were getting one hit combined by the Rockies heading into the ninth inning. They were trailing 3-1. Brandon Smurt was on the hook for the loss. Ryan Feltner shoved for six innings. The bullpen was holding up. And then it was Antonio Senzatella back out there for a six-inning save against the Brewers. When a rally started, thanks to his own error.
And the 0-1 to Contreras. He has a ground ball. Glove by Senzatelli. He goes to second. He threw it into center field. Tarang turns second. He's on his way to third. Oh, my goodness. The Rockies have opened the door here in the ninth.
Oh, Wayne Grindle knew it immediately. You can't give the Brewers extra outs to play with. So, with Contreras aboard and men on the corners and nobody out, the next batter, man who will be a big role later, Jake Bauer.
And that Let's Go Brewers starting to get louder and louder here at Coors Field. Senzatela, the first pitch to Bowers. And a line drive into center. It's down for a base hit. Tarang will trot home. Stopping at second is Perkins. And the Brewers within a run. It is 3-2, Colorado.
So they're getting momentum. Garrett Mitchell was up next. He was showing bunt, fouled off one, fell behind 0-2. Worked count 2-2, but ultimately struck out. There's the first out of the inning. Brewers still down by a run. There were only runners on first and second with one out, and Sal Frelick, you just heard his manager say he's had 9 straight quality at-bats. Here's one of them.
The pitch. And a ground ball right side. That's going to get through and into right center field. Around third is Perkins. He's going to score. Bowers lumbering towards third, sliding into second with an RBI. Game-tying double is Salvatore Frelick.
He was fired up, and that is the understatement of the season, screaming back to his dugout on second base. Now, they still weren't done. Renjifo was due. They go to the bench. Andrew Vaughn pinch hitting right on right against Antonio Senzatela. He falls into a 1-2 hole and battles, and with the infield in, there are other holes out there.
1-2 pitch and a bouncer back up the middle into center fielder base hit. Bowers is in. Frelick around third. He will score. Andrew Vaughn drives in 2 on a single here in the ninth at Coors, and it is 5-3 Milwaukee.
Well, thank goodness they got greedy there in that ninth inning to get 2 runs, ending into the bottom of the ninth inning because they needed every bit of it. Trevor McGill had the ball for the bottom of the ninth inning. However, a miscommunication for an infield hit for the first batter of the frame started the rally for the Rockies. Then another single up the middle by Carlos. Then a strikeout by McCarthy and another clean single by Freeman had the bases loaded and nobody out. It became bases loaded walk, sack fly, and then a fly out to end the inning. But we're going to extras. And we're going to free baseball. Churio would strike out to start the 10th with Yelly on second. But back-to-back walks would load the bases for that man again, Jake Bauer.
The 0-1 pitch. Lined into the gap in right center field. Wide open spaces. It hits. It rolls. It's all the way to the wall. 2 runs are in. Sanchez held at third. Another big swing by Jake Bowers. A go-ahead 2-run double. And Milwaukee's back in front in the 10th. It is 7-5, the Brewers.
And even Garrett Mitchell went at an RBI single as the next batter. And they still weren't done with Sal once again.
And the 0-1 to Contreras. He has a ground ball. Glove by Senzatela. He goes to second. He threw it into center field.
What a game this has turned into. Frelick waits. He's been on base 3 times tonight. He lines another one into shallow right field. That's in for a base hit. There comes the 4th run of the 10th inning. Bowers touches home. Stopping at second is Mitchell. That is Frelick with another RBI knock.
Back-to-back 4-run innings for the Brewers in the 9th and the 10th. But the Rockies still didn't go away. To their credit, Aaron Ashby on the mound now. He hit the first batter. Walk the next, allowed a 2-run single up the middle, and you're thinking, oh my goodness, are they really doing this? But you got a double play ball to Carlos, and then finally, lefty on lefty, Jake McCarthy, the final hole.
And the noise you hear, Brewers fans littered throughout Coors Field. The 2-2 pitch, swing and a miss. Got him with a slider, and that ends a wild, wacky 10-inning win at Coors Field for the Brewers. 9-7.
The final score today. Woo! Exhale. How about it? They snapped a little schneid that they were in losing the last 2 games in against San Francisco. And now to get ready for game 2 tomorrow. Preview it next as we say goodnight, finally, or good morning on 620 WTMJ. Last couple seconds of the show here as we get ready to say goodnight. I'm ready to go to bed. Again, we are on the air at 7 with Brewers warm-up tomorrow. Yours truly leading you up to first pitch, 8 o'clock first pitch, 8:10 I should say. On Deck Show takes over at 7:35. Tomorrow, the Miz gets his introduction to altitude. Hope he's pounding the electrolytes right now as we speak. Jacob Mizorowski gets the ball. He will be going up against another right-hander and is listed as TBD now. So maybe there's a change that we don't know about. That's it for us. Evan Witalison's our producer. I'm Dom Catronio. Keep on swinging.